It was the first mass medium. But how does it work?
It's as marvelous and as simple as
Peter Tilden.
At 10!
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 begins right now. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. Will, of course, beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. Listen this hour to win a $25 Norm's gift card and to qualify for your chance to roll like a VIP in Vegas. That is happening. We've got a lot to discuss. The phone number, 800-222-5222. The Rob Porter, exiting, firing, being pushed out, I left, abuse of his ex-wives, is still in the news in a big way. I'll explain why in moments. Omarosa is speaking and saying some incredible things about Vice President Pence. Small businesses are booming. Big optimism there. James Comey may have an email problem. We'll discuss all of that. But there's a new book out by the, going to be a new book out by the White House lawyer Michael Cohen. And he's going to set the record straight. He's got a book proposal out there. It's called Trump Revolution from the Tower to the White House, Understanding Donald Trump. And he's going to try and explain his role in setting up the private LLC to pay off, allegedly pay off porn star Stormy Daniels, the $130,000. And what he says, he's pitching it as a rebuttal to Michael Wolff's book, and says that all these other books are based on arm's length observations gleaned over relatively brief periods of time. I don't know that that's accurate, and we'll find out right now, because a book that's getting a lot of heat and attention again is The Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency by Joshua Green. We have Joshua on. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Great to be back with you.
So you're going to have more competition now with Michael Cohen's book is going to come out.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd call that competition. I mean, from what I've read of the book pitch, it sounds more like a press release between hardcovers that's meant to push back against some of the damage inflicted on Trump and the people around him by Michael Wolff's book, probably by my book, and a lot of the other books that have come out that have kind of revealed the dysfunction in the Trump White House and the Trump campaign.
Well, there's fascinating new revelations that have come out of your book, which is why you're in the news big time. And thanks for taking the time to come on. I really appreciate it. First of all, talk about when you did the book, the kind of access that you had to Bannon and to the president.
Well, you know, I came out with a hard version of this book in July. I'd spent the last 5 or 6 years with Bannon, who I'd known, you know, long before he came into the Trump orbit. And so I had this kind of up close in the room access throughout the campaign and the early transition to kind of tell the story of Trump's rise and his partnership with Bannon. What I do in the new paperback version in a new, juicy new reported process is essentially tell the story of how that Bannon-Trump relationship fell apart and how it is that the White House wound up in such chaos. So I re-embedded with Bannon and, you know, some White House folks to sort of tell the story of how it is that, you know, they've wound up, pinballing from a series of increasingly bizarre scandals, the latest being this spousal abuse scandal involving the former staff secretary, Rob Porter.
And it's a fascinating book, and with the updates, it's out, I think, today, correct?
Today. You can find it in bookstores everywhere.
Today's the day. So let's address some of those issues. The one shocking statement, I guess, is that Bannon was really upset by the ouster and said, I'm tired of being a nursemaid to a 71-year-old?
Yeah, so, you know, when Bannon left the White House last August, it was presented by both the White House and Bannon as being, an amicable parting of the ways. Bannon was going to fight for Trump on the outside, against the establishment and the media and so on. What I do in the preface of the book is tell you what really happened. And behind the scenes, Bannon was furious. He refused to take Trump's phone calls. He told people around him, I'm sick of being wet nurse to a 71-year-old man. Not a very pleasant mental image, but like a lot of the characters in Wolff's book, I think it gives you the sense that everybody around Trump is disgusted by him, is frustrated by him, questions his fitness for office, and is really driven crazy both by his inability to focus on an issue for any particular length, and even more so to undercut his own White House and his own efforts through Twitter, which of course we just saw him do in the Rob Porter scandal, coming out and kind of tweeting a supportive note for Porter. At the same time, the White House was frantically trying to distance themselves from an alleged wife beater.
But that said, once Bannon was gone from the White House, You mentioned that he wasn't, I think you put it as not forgotten, because members of Congress visit him, which I was unaware of. I think Henry Kissinger, you said, reached out to him. Foreign officials reached out to him. And even the president started reaching out to him again, correct?
Yeah, the president never stopped talking to him. I mean, Bannon, I think a lot of people at the time recognized, was both somebody who intuitively understood, connected with Trump's base, and to an extent through Breitbart News, really shaped what they thought and what they cared about. And so Bannon was still an important guy, especially people in Congress. You know, I used to see Senator Lindsey Graham coming and going from the Breitbart embassy, having these meetings with Bannon. So it was clear he still had a hand in politics. And what Bannon was trying to do was build up an outside insurgency of Trump-friendly candidates who would come in and knock off elected Republicans, establishment types, aligned with Mitch McConnell. And there was a better example of that, of course, in Bannon's efforts to get Roy Moore elected to the Senate in Alabama. But as we saw with Moore, it didn't work out quite the way that Bannon had hoped. Things kind of went off the rails, and Trump and Bannon ended up having an epic falling out, due in part to Trump, which Bannon's habit of talking to reporters.
Well, not only talking to reporters, excuse me for a second, just getting over this flu and I didn't want to cough on the mic, but did you think Bannon's big misstep was, even though he's smart and he has an intent and he has a focus, you mentioned the fact that everywhere he went, he always had a reporter with him or was being filmed. His ego got in the way big time, and that's what
I think that's exactly right. You know, I was going to say there's a striking similarity. You know, I've spent time with Trump. I've spent a lot of time with Bannon. And you know, you wouldn't know from the outside, the two men are very much alike, you know. Very high energy, big media metabolism, love to talk to reporters, but both of them also have healthy egos. And I think if you want to look at what really caused the falling out between the two men, and this is what I write in the new version of the book, they essentially differed over who ought to get credit for the 2016 election, the greatest political upset in American presidential history. Bannon thought it was a referendum on a set of nationalist, populist ideas that were Bannon's. Trump thought it was a referendum on Trump, and that was essentially what led to their falling out, this fight for credit. And I think we can see now that Bannon has kind of been cast out into Siberia by Trump, and the Republican Party is very favorable toward Trump, that, you know, looks like Trump was right and Bannon was wrong.
So how did a guy who's allegedly so smart and so intuitive and got his way in and helped the campaign become what it became, how can he be so oblivious of the severity of the storm when the fire and fury came out?
You know, I don't know about you, but I encounter a lot of people in my really brilliant, talented people who seem to have certain blind spots. And I think that Bannon's blind spot was, his desire for acclaim, for public acknowledgement of all the brilliant things that he's done. One of the toughest things about being a political strategist is that as brilliant as you are, at the end of the day, the candidate always has to be the star player.
Right, right.
And that was something that Bannon could never really abide. And so he would tout himself to me, to Michael Wolff, to other people as somebody who's the key figure. And in fairness, he really was the key figure. Trump would be president without Steve Bannon, but that just isn't something that you can say to reporters and book authors and hope to continue in a high-level White House job.
Yeah, but it's like a record,
especially not with this president.
But it's like a record producer. When a superstar producer like a David Foster produces a Celine Dion, yeah, he can take some of the credit, but you got to make sure she's the star or you're not producing anymore.
That's right. And Bannon's ego is healthy enough that he wasn't willing to be the star producer. He wanted to be the pop star. He wanted to be the candidate. And, you know, one of the things I did with him beginning in August when he left the White House was to travel around the country, often on private jets with, you know, Navy SEALs, the security guards, ex-Navy SEALs, as Bannon went around very much like a presidential candidate around the country and gave stump speeches to rapturous conservative audiences who really ate it up. One of the stories I tell in the new paperback is that Bannon himself was thinking about running for president if Trump either decided not to or was impeached, and went so far as to come up with a third party and give it a name, the National Union Party, that Bannon thought could pull their left-wing and right-wing populace. Wow. And maybe be his own vehicle to get to the White House. So it gives you a sense of the scale of his ambitions.
Talking to Joshua Green, the new paperback is out, The Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. It is amazing to see not only that he's estranged from the White House, but the Mercers and his money. I mean, he has virtually no support, I'm guessing, or maybe he does still. Does he have support anywhere?
Not a whole lot. It doesn't seem like. I mean, what Trump did to Bannon was, you know, unlike anything I've ever seen. Trump is a vindictive human being, and he was so enraged at what Bannon said in the Michael Wolff book, at what Bannon had said to other reporters and authors, including me, that he decided finally he was going to publicly blow up Bannon, which he did in that shocking White House statement, calling him Sloppy Steve and saying he had nothing to do with his election. But he went a step further, and he went to all the top White House officials. He said, you need to choose between Steve and me, and he marched him out on television to criticize Bannon. And then he went to the Mercer family, Bannon's big financial benefactor, and got Bannon basically pushed out of Breitbart News and SiriusXM Radio, where he had a show, robbed him of his money, of his platform, and really his ability to have a voice in American politics.
So was he sitting home in his underwear today, rocking back and forth and watching Megyn Kelly?
Thanks for that mental image. I hope not. No, what Bannon is doing, what he's always doing, is plotting how to return to power and influence. And, you know, one of the final scenes in the new version of the book is Bannon watching the Golden Globe Awards last month, seeing Oprah on the stage and the Me Too energy. His project lately has been going and trying to sound the alarm for Trump and Republicans that there is a massive political backlash coming. Women, from liberals, from the Time's Up activists, that Bannon doesn't think the White House is alert to. So he is trying to get back in that way. Maybe if Republicans get wiped out in November, Trump thinks to himself, I need new blood in here. I'm going to call Steve Bannon. That's what Bannon's waiting for.
It's interesting. I was going to bring that up next because in light of the Rob Porter thing, which a couple days ago I said, boy, I wonder if this is going to limp off into the sunset like a lot of other issues do. And it's not. It seems to be building because the ex-wives are talking. Because there's a new timeline. There's an intel meeting this morning of all the intel agencies, the FBI and all the intel chiefs at the Senate Intel Committee. And they asked the head of the FBI about the timeline for Porter, and it completely, discredits the timeline that the White House has been putting out. And the question I was going to discuss with the listeners was, is he going to lose support among women? And there's a survey that there is a bit of a backlash. It's dropped. Uneducated college women, women without college degrees, let's put it that way, are dropping. It went down from 61% to 52%. But I was wondering, with the economy chugging along in November, it's always the economy, stupid, when people are getting bonuses. And I got a report that the economy is really record levels of optimism from small businesses who are saying they will give raises, they will give bonuses. We're waiting tomorrow to see the report that comes out about whether there's inflation in the government right now, which is spooking Wall Street, which is why you're seeing stocks go up and down. But global markets, they're going up and down. However, because of investor fears, it looks like jobs keep increasing, and that usually that could stave off a blue wave in this election, and Trump could actually benefit from that, disregarding what's happening right now with women and the supporter situation. And what do you think about that, knowing Trump?
There's no question that the economy is the best thing Trump has going for. I'm not sure how responsible he is for it. He certainly gets some of the credit. And while the stock market was doing well, he was eager to take that credit. And that is going to get some Republicans feeling good enough to go out and vote for him. The problem is he has activated the liberal Democratic base to an extent that nobody in politics has ever seen before. I spent all day and a political strategist in both parties, and there is no disagreement from Republicans that the Democratic base is more fired up than they've ever been. And scandals like this spousal abuse scandal in the White House, and the fact that there is absolutely no show of contrition, not from John Kelly, the chief of staff, not from Sarah Sanders, spokesman, certainly not from Trump, who tweeted on behalf of his disgraced former aide. Episodes like this fire up the opposition, and they discourage supporters, Republicans, who would otherwise be inclined to show up at the polls and support Trump because of exactly what you said, the strong state of the economy, the stock market, and the fact that things may be humming along in their own lives. Political strategists will tell you enthusiasm is what matters, especially in a midterm election where there's lower turnout than normal. Right now, Democrats have that enthusiasm. From everything I can see, Republicans in the White House are inadvertently stoking Democratic enthusiasm levels even higher.
So before we go, Joshua, in dealing with that, why don't you reveal, and it's in the new paperback, what the concern was watching the Golden Globes, because he's a Hollywood guy. He started out here in Hollywood. He's invested in Hollywood shows, et cetera. I think he owns a piece of Seinfeld. the Me Too movement, why that spooked him so much, why he thought this was going to be the thing that could cause real problems for the White House.
Well, one of the things Bannon was looking at was Virginia's off-year elections. Last fall, they had state house elections, and Democrats absolutely trounced Republicans, not just in big cities, but also in rural areas. And that was driven largely by female candidates and by female political activists. So we can already see this movement happening. But what struck Bannon so much about the Golden Globe Awards was Oprah, was the fact that, you know, she had this national audience on the stage and articulated a critique of Trump and the country and America in a way that was empowering and that rallied women, not just at the show, but on TV across the country. I mean, it led to this whole week or two long wave of speculation that Oprah herself might run for president. And a point that Bannon makes to me in the book is that, look, she didn't even have to run for president. If she just gets out there and campaigns for Democrats in the fall, Republicans are going to lose control of the House. And if they lose control of the House, they can impeach Trump. Oprah, he says, is an existential threat. I'm not sure he's wrong about that.
Well, we'll see soon. The book is great. There's so much information in there. And I thank you. A senior national correspondent for Bloomberg and Business Week author of The Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. It's out in paperback today with all of this new information and more that we didn't even get to touch. So thanks for coming on. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you came on the first day that it's out. So thanks a lot.
Always great to be with you. Thank you.
Joshua. Yeah, a fascinating book, and I wanted to talk about a little about the Porter thing because there's so much new information, and I'll try and give you the information. But I'd love your feedback as far as the fallout with women, Republican women specifically. Is this going to affect women voting in the midterm elections? Is it going to affect his approval ratings? The fact that this thing will not go away, this Porter issue, and the fact that, I mean, now the ex-wives are saying the White House never reached out to us, never said anything to us, and they're making other statements, plus the speechwriter who left, his wife is speaking out now too, and the timeline that just came out this morning. I had the earphones in and was listening to the testimony in front of the Senate committee, and when they asked Mr. Wray, the head of the FBI, about the vetting process and what happened with Porter, it contradicts what John Kelly said, and it looks like, from stuff I'm reading, if it's accurate, that John Kelly's been hung out kind of to dry by the president. It's going to be his problem, because they all believed that not only was John Kelly on top of stuff, but it looks like now John Kelly was considering a promotion for Porter, and he didn't even have the security clearance. Remember that? And it took a long time to get the security clearance. They were blaming the FBI. The FBI was pretty clear this morning on the security clearance, and I'll tell you what Mr. Wray said when we return. The phone number, 800-222-5222. We'll take your calls when we return here. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues, and KABC gives you a chance to roll like a VIP in Vegas, which includes two upfront tickets to see Celine Dion during her residency at the Coliseum at Caesars Palace, plus two nights at a Caesars Las Vegas property, a gas card, and some spending cash. So be the seventh caller right now on our new contest line, 888-790-5222, to win a $25 gift card to Norm's and get in the running to roll like a VIP in Vegas. Also, I'd love to talk to you on our regular line about the fallout from the Porter situation, that it's dragging on. When we come back, I'll play you the FBI director, Chris Wray, talking about the background on Porter and when they completed his background check and what the White House is saying, what he's saying. And this is not going to go away because it's getting convoluted and uglier. I will, before we go to break, though, tell you that, and I started to talk about this with Joshua Green, that the wages are rising according to a new survey. And you know what? Main Street is having a good time. Record levels of enthusiasm for expansion following a record-breaking optimism among small businesses. 31% of small businesses reported paying employees more, the highest since 2000, and also unemployment's the lowest since 2000. The United States has added jobs every month for more than 7 years, the longest streak on record. For the past 8 years, of course, the Fed hasn't raised interest rates to keep them historically low, and the tight job market and the hot job market makes the employees have to pay workers more to retain them and recruit employees. We're just waiting to see if it's going to boost inflation. But that's something that's going for this White House in a big, big way. The other thing is there's a bombshell email that suggests that James Comey may have misled Congress concerning meetings with Obama on Russian hacking. I'll talk about that too this hour. 800-222-5222. We'll talk to you next right after the news here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilden 10 continues, and congratulations to Nancy in Compton. She won a $25 gift card to Norm's, where life, of course, happens. She's in the running for the trip to Vegas to see Celine Dion, as Celine returns back to her residency at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace, now through June 20, 2018. And your next chance at noon with Dr. Drew and Lawrence Savon, the Vegas trips furnished by Mixed Media. So the latest on the Rob Porter situation, it appears that the chief of staff, Mr. Kelly, said that 40 minutes within realizing what went on there, they got his resignation. Well, we're finding out now that's not the case, that Sarah Sanders held a meeting between four reporters and Rob Porter after the scandal broke, and he did a Q&A with those reporters. One of them was Josh Dawsey from Washington Post, Maggie Haberman, Jonathan Swan, and Michael Bender. So that dragged out, and then the White House is also saying that as far as your intel background checks, it's not up to them. They can only make the recommendation. They just give the information. It's up to the White House to decide what to do with the information. The White House is saying, no, we were advised by the FBI. And the timeline there came out this morning during the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, where they asked Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, what was the timeline as to when they started investigating Rob Porter and when the White House had information about the security clearance and the fact that he abused two ex-wives, and they had an order, one of the wives had an order to stay away. And here's what Christopher Wray said.
So was the White House informed that this could affect his security clearance? That's a yes or no.
I can't get into the content of what was briefed.
But what were
they
informed?
What I can tell you is that the FBI submitted a partial report on the investigation in question in March, and then a completed background investigation in late July. That is, soon thereafter, we received requests for follow-up inquiry, and we did the follow-up and provided that information in November, and then we administratively closed the file in January. And then earlier this month, we received some additional information, and we passed that on as well.
So it appears that they knew quite some time ago that there were major issues there, and they closed it out in, where are we, February? March, July, November, when they closed it out. In light of that, with all of those requests for information and scrutiny, several White House officials, including Chief of Staff, were receptive to promoting Porter to major position. They're willing to apparently overlook all this. In the White House, I guess, is Kelly's not a novice. Were they willing to think maybe this was not going to rear its ugly little head, and we'd give this guy a high visibility job and hope that it goes away? I can't imagine, and obviously it didn't. But in light of all this, not only were they apparently looking the other way, but they were looking at promoting him. GOP Senator Joni Ernst is now criticizing the White House, and you got a second disgraced Trump aide's wife speaks out, and that is David Sorensen left his job as a White House speechwriter on Friday after his former wife Jessica Corbett alleged that while they were married, he ran a car over her foot, put a cigarette out in her hand, and here she is making a statement.
He yelled at me nearly every day we were married. The recording that was heard by the FBI was just one of so many. He has thrown me into a wall. He has put a cigarette out of my hand. He has left me stranded in countless airports, cut off my credit cards in the middle of the night, drained my bank account, told me I can't come home or that I would be homeless.
So these are two who just left the White House. Now, I'd love your reaction, 800-222-5222. And if you think the president not responding to this by reaching out to the exes is a huge misstep, or is it just going to go away and it will limp off in the next couple of days in the next news cycle? It will be gone and it will not impact the midterms at all because the economy is booming along. 800-222-5222. Talk to you in a moment here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10. I guess we didn't pay for the music. Okay, we did. Coming up right after the top of the hour, I want to talk about you can basically legally bribe a politician today. No problem. And I'll explain why and get your feedback. Also, they want to slash food stamps and replace them with a Blue Apron type program, delivery program for food. and I want to discuss that. But we now have information as to why Omarosa was fired, and she left Big Brother, I guess, because she had an asthma attack. She's always in the news. But she also talked about, you know, she's been slamming the president, but she also had this to say about the vice president. Listen carefully, because the quality's not that great, and they also whisper on Big Brother. I don't know why. It's on TV. They know people are watching, but they feel compelled to whisper to each other, because who are they hiding from? Here you go.
Can I just say this? As bad as y'all think Trump is, you would be worried about Pence.
I know.
So everybody that's wishing for impeachment might want to reconsider their life.
Absolutely.
We would be begging for days of Trump back if Pence became president. That's all I'm saying. He's extreme. I'm Christian. I love Jesus. But he thinks Jesus tells him to say things. I'm like, Jesus didn't say that.
So, which, if you couldn't hear it, she said that I'm Christian, I love Jesus, but he thinks Jesus tells him to say things. I'm like, Jesus ain't saying that. And, of course, I guess on that show now, they're discussing politics, because you got Omarosa, Ross the intern, and some people who are really up on politics. But I guess they want to use her her connection to the White House to make some noise. But here's the reason she was fired, apparently, which used Carpet, which is the White House car service, to pick up and drop off. The problem is, the White House Transportation Agency, their job is driving, securing, and maintaining the presidential motorcade for the president and his family, nobody else. And according to an Army Times article, they're staffed exclusively by Army NCOs and provide 24-hour transportation and cargo support services to only the chief executive. Staff on the agency have duties that typically involve driving in presidential motorcades, providing support services for Air Force One flights, and assisting in other travel-related activities in the United States and overseas. So she was using this car service. My question is, if they're just for the president and Omarosa calls the car service, don't they just say no? What was going on? They didn't monitor it. They didn't know. So it took John Kelly coming in there to look at her and say, you're out? And she's been slamming the White House ever since her departure. Via her vehicle now, Celebrity Big Brother. But yeah, so the car service is just for the president. Omarosa calls and they say yes, okay. Why don't you say no to her? How does she get to use it anyway? All right, Talk Radio 790 KBC. We shall return in a moment.
This is Peter Kilden.
Thank you, Talk Radio 790 KBC. So what do you think about this? This just broke. Canesville Elementary School, Ogden, Utah, they hold a sixth grade dance on Valentine's Day each year. And the dance, they want to promote inclusion. They want to promote kindness. And they've been, traditionally over the years, been told by their teachers to say yes when a classmate asks them to dance. But today, parents are angry because of the Me Too movement that girls have to say yes if a boy asks them to dance. You're teaching them that they can say no. They have to take care if they're uncomfortable with something. But at this dance, no, you have to say yes. You have to accept. And parents are saying, excuse me? They're teaching their kids not to hug a friend or even kiss their grandparents at this point. I just saw another thing in the Girl Scouts where they're saying, you do not have to hug a relative at Christmas time or holiday times anymore. You can say no at that point. Boy, that would have gotten me out of a lot of stuff. But what do you think about that? They're trying to teach kids one message. And then here, the message is, you have to say yes. You can't say no. One mother said, psychologically, my daughter keeps coming and saying, I can't say no to a boy. And that's a message that kids are getting. Is that a problem? I can't imagine. You have to say yes. I guess you don't want to hurt anybody's feeling. But wow. I guess they also fill out a dance card with names of classmates they'd like to dance with. Half the selections are girls. The others are boys. But that's an awkward thing if you tell a kid, you must say yes to dance with every boy who asks you to dance. Good idea, bad idea? 800-222-5222. We'll be back.